This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, buddy. All right, everybody. Sorry. We are back. Sorry about that. We had a bit of a technical issue. We were about to come on the air, and then all of a sudden, we weren't able to go on the air. But now I'm here. Sal Capaccio with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Welcome in today. Glad to be with you here on this Tuesday. Got a good show lined up for you today, and that includes, in an hour from now, going to hear from Buffalo Bills, former Buffalo Bills safety, Micah Hyde. Micah's going to bring his charity softball game to Buffalo once again, to downtown Buffalo at Salem Field, downtown, home of the Buffalo Bisons. And I know that they're close to a sellout. There's still some tickets left, but we're going to talk about that. But of course, his time in Buffalo and his career in the NFL. He has officially retired, and we'll talk about that. So Micah Hyde joining me at 10 o'clock. I'm sorry, at 11 o'clock. At 10:30 today, got a interesting guest, Ben Ostro of Football Zebras. If you follow Football Zebras online, it's a great site for rules and analysts and analysis and things like that. And not only is it a great site for that, but it's also a good time for us to kind of digest what's going to be happening about a week from now. Next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, essentially, in West Palm Beach, the NFL owners meetings are going on. And that is when the NFL will... Competition committee will vote on rules proposals, or at least the owners, I should say, will vote on the competition committee rules proposals, what some of the teams put forward, all that's happening next week. When last week we learned that there were all these different proposals, like the Lions saying, hey, the defensive holding and illegal contact should no longer be an automatic first down, things like that. In fact, the Lions also proposed having a wild card team with a better record than a division winner seated higher. When all that went down, and we saw all of that last week, there was nothing about the dynamic kickoff. You know, so like what I mean is we had heard a lot of rumblings about how the kickoff, which last year went from the 25 to the 30-yard line for touchbacks in order to increase kickoff returns. And it did work, by the way. They did increase kickoff returns. We heard that the NFL is going to look at that again and go from the 30 to 35-yard line. So, but we didn't see anything with the rules proposals when they came out. However, according to Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports, he reported a couple days ago, it is actually going to be on the docket, at least for a discussion from the competition committee as far as examining the kickoff and if they should move it to the 35. So what this tells me is this is going to happen. And I tell you, there's some breadcrumbs here. I told you when I went to the combine, I was shocked when I didn't see it on the rules proposals, because when I went to the combine last month, this was a big talk. I was told by several people this is very much in play, that this could very well happen, moving the touchback from the 30 to the 35-yard line. Then I didn't see it out there. And the rules proposals, I was stunned. Not only that, but even since the combine till now, teams are signing kickoff return specialists, which we didn't really see in the NFL for a while. But now we're seeing it, including the Bills. The Bills signed Laviska Shenault. Laviska Shenault's going to be a kickoff return specialist. That's really what he's going to be. And Brandon Bean basically said that. When he was signed, I said, I think this is about the kickoff return, even though we haven't seen anything official on it. I think that's why they signed him. And I know a lot of people thought, well, maybe it's because of James Cook and his situation. So Ty Johnson has to be playing running back, and then you want to fill in for Ty. I think he's going way down the rabbit hole. This, to me, the Laviska Shenault signing, just like Devin Duvernay wound up signing. Where'd he go? Maybe San Francisco. So he went somewhere. I think it might have been San Francisco. I have to look at that. But he was also signed recently. Teams are signing kickoff return specialists. I think teams know this is happening, including the Bills. So I think that we're going to see a move from the 30 to 35-yard line when it comes to the dynamic, as they say, kickoff return and the touchback. And Jonathan Jones actually has a really good article on it, and I want to touch on that. Ben Ostro is going to join me at 10:30 a.m. All right. Josh, I know you had to step out for a second. Are you there with me? Are you there? I want to tell you something. I got to tell you something great here because we've been... Okay. Are you right here? Are you there? All right. Okay, here we go. We did it. You ready? We did it. I'm going to say we did it. We did nothing except bring the information to the masses. As of 10:09 a.m., which is right now, there are 1,000 names in the transfer portal. Exactly 1,000.
Wow. We did it.
We did it.
There it is.
We really didn't do anything except bring the information. So I went and looked. Last year, through the entire college basketball, through the entire portal season, if you want to call it, 2,080 names. We are now at 1,000. The portal officially just opened yesterday. Now, there were names in there before it, so I don't know how it officially opened yesterday and there were names in it. But as of, hold on. Oh, I'm sorry. I just tweeted this out. As of 10:09 a.m. Sorry. I didn't even put the time. As of 10:09 a.m. today, the Division I basketball transfer portal hit 1,000 players. Last year, there were a total of 2,080 players. There you go. This is all, by the way, data from Verbal Commits is where I get this. 803-0550. Here's what I'd like to do today. I'm thinking about the rules. Thinking about NFL rules changes. What's going to happen next week? I'll be at the owners' meetings in West Palm. I'll bring you the information while we're there. Thinking about rules changes. What rule would you like to see changed in the NFL? It could be something that maybe they changed once you'd like to go back to. Maybe it's something that you would like to see go forward. Something that could be proposed. Something that is proposed. Whatever it is. I tweeted this out at Sal Sports. Okay. Bill. Good job, Bill. I like this. A lot of people have this one and have said this. He said, I would say a fumble through the end zone does not lead to a turnover. The team keeps the ball at the 20-yard line. Is that a good rule? There have been proposals about this, but the league has never changed it. And I understand when anybody says it's way too punitive if you fumble it through the end zone. So right now, the way it works is if you're running with the football and you're at the 5, the 4, the 3, the 2, the 1-yard line, whatever it is, and you fumble the ball into the end zone and then it goes out of bounds through the end zone, like the back or the side, whatever, that you lose the ball. The other team gets it. It counts like a punt touchback. That's exactly, it's not a kickoff touchback, a punt touchback because it goes to the 20-yard line. Yeah, I can see that. Matt says, make judgment calls reviewable by the eye in the sky. 10 seconds max to review it. I am not for this, Matt, and I'll tell you why. Everything is a judgment call. A holding is a judgment call. He says, why are there limits on referee challenges? If a ref gets 3 calls wrong or 4 or more. I understand that. I think the reason why, Matt, and I'm with you, like you shouldn't be penalized. And last year they changed this. If you win your challenge, you get one. You still keep... Like, I think you can do 2 now and still get them back. It's changed the rules over the years. But the reason why you can't just have, you know, unmitigated, basically, reviews on judgment calls is because every play there'd be judgment call, a holding. Well, why wasn't that holding? Well, you called holding. Can we review that? I think that's why they do that. 803-0550 if you want to jump on board at Sal Sports. Also, if you want to tweet at me, what one rule would you like to see changed in the NFL? We have the rules proposals next week at the NFL owners meetings, also called the official name is the annual league meetings. Also, Josh, you know how we've been talking about the local connections to college basketball over the last couple weeks, you know, in March Madness and all
that?
Yeah, right?
I saw there was another connection out there now, right?
Yeah, there is. Congratulations to Brian Hodgson. Now, Brian Hodgson is a Jamestown native, Olean native. He's from Jamestown, Olean. I think he went to Jamestown High School. I have to make sure on that. But he's from that area, and he became an assistant coach at UB under Nate Oates. After that, after Nate left for Alabama, he went with him to Alabama. Then he became the Arkansas State head coach. They had a fantastic year in just 2 years. They did some great things over at Arkansas State. He has now been named Brian Hodgson, local guy from down in Jamestown. He is now the new head coach at the University of South Florida, the Bulls. How about that? And what's really interesting is yesterday, Josh, there was a lot of buzz about he was going to become the new UNLV coach. And it was like, oh, Brian Hodgson's going to go to UNLV. Then suddenly out of nowhere, bam, it's USF. So obviously his agent was gauging both, however that went down. But we have another local connection to big-time college basketball. Brian Hodgson has been hired by the University of South Florida, USF, to be their new men's head basketball coach. So check it out. You can follow Brian on Twitter, by the way, at Coach B. Hodgson. He's already changed his profile. Just named last night head men's basketball coach at the University of South Florida. Hashtag horns up. All right, so good for Brian Hodgson right there. Michael, let's see. Nope, this is not. How about this? Irkiel says, I would like to see defensive pass interference not be a spot foul. I'd like to see it a 15-yard penalty and automatic first down. Yeah, I mean, I understand that. It's the college rule, right? We've seen this before. For a lot of, a lot of people have suggested this. We've seen this before, and college does it. If you throw the ball downfield, there's a pass interference. It's a 15-yard penalty. Automatic first down. It's not a spot foul way down the field. Gord, they should stop trying to make kickoffs relevant. I think he said a relevant. I think he means relevant. Much like moving the extra point back. Has that really made the extra point more interesting? Yes. Yes, I think it has. I absolutely think it's made the extra point more interesting. That's a good question. Yes. What do you think, Josh? Moving the extra point back to where they've moved it. Do you think it's made the extra point more interesting?
I think so, yeah, because I feel like you've seen like an increased number of extra points missed, but I also wonder, would those still have happened even if you had it in the same spot that you did before? Because a lot of those, it was, wide left or wide right. Like I feel like, and when they were wide left or wide right, they were very wide left or wide right. So it's not like, if you would have been closer, they would have like squeaked in or anything like that. So
is this where we have to have a geometry lesson and say that, yeah, that's because they're farther away. So by the time it gets there, it's going to be wider.
Right. That is true. That might be. Skewing my mindset there, but my point more so is I think that I do wonder if it has changed as much as we think it has, because maybe it's more so the mental aspect of these kickers now. Like, oh, I got to hit it a little bit harder, so that might accidentally push it wide right or wide left. So there is probably a mental aspect that plays into it rather than, you know, like the physical aspect of the game itself. But I think it's okay. I don't know if you really need to change it much more, though, because I don't really know what else you can do to it that would make it more difficult. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to see. I want to see if I have the data on... There's clearly more extra points missed, right? There's clearly more, but I want to see the data on it. And I can go back and look at that. You know, I could take a look. I wasn't prepared for it, but I definitely would like to do it now that you've mentioned it, because I'm thinking, okay, what is the actual data on, you know, extra points that have been missed? And I guarantee you there's been more, you know, over the last, since they made that rule change. Yes, I think it is more interesting. Like, when you score a touchdown in a close game, I mean, if you got to kick the extra point, look at the Houston-Kansas City game last year in the playoffs. And that was a big deal when he missed an extra point, right? We've had him here. Tyler Bass struggled, missed a couple extra points. I don't think they've necessarily cost the Bills games. I have to go back and think, but with teams, it has happened to teams when you play close games. I think moving the extra point back has actually made extra points, A, more interesting, and B, gotten the intended effect of what they... Yeah, well, that's it. The intended effect is more interesting. You want to stick around and watch it. BG, I like this one. I never have really understood why teams have to make players on their active roster inactive for game day. I'll explain why they do that. Doesn't mean that you have to like it, but I'll give you the explanation. Because the NFL's thought is, if you the larger the roster on game day, the more it separates the haves and have-nots, the less parity there is. Because the theory is from the NFL... There's financial implications too, but mainly the theory is from the NFL, the bottom end guys on really good teams are going to be way better than the bottom end guys on bad teams. So if everybody dresses, it's just more, you know, of a gap, less parity. And they want close games as much as possible. They don't want to do that. But that's a lot of the reasoning why, whether you want to, you know, like that or not, that's what it is. So the kickoff stuff has always been really interesting. Oh, Kerry, I like this. 1 foot inbounds on a catch. More exciting plays and easier to officiate. I have always thought this should be maybe something in the NFL, Kerry. And the reason is, I agree. The NFL has always been about exciting catches, exciting plays, right? I mean, 1 foot inbounds. The issue I have with it is we have changed so much, and they have, to benefit the offense. Why continue benefiting the offense? The defense needs something. Defense needs something. All right, so here's what Jonathan Jones wrote at CBSSports.com this week about the NFL possibly moving the kickoff touchback from the 30 to the 35-yard line. He writes, after a 2023 season 2 years ago where there was a historically low return rate of kickoffs, the league wanted to resuscitate the play. So they obviously went to, okay, let's move it to the 30. That's a little more, you know, penal. If teams kick it into the end zone, there's a touchback. You're going to have to deal with a team starting at the 30, so you might not want to do that. Well, the average field position last season was the 29.6-yard line when including touchbacks. If you remove it, it was the 28.8. Doesn't sound like much. There's a 1 yard difference, right? The league had only 21.5% of kicks land in the landing zone. Placing the ball at the 35-yard line should cause coaches to think twice about booting the ball too deep. The league's internal data, according to this article, shows a 65 to 75% return rate if the touchback is moved to the 35, more than double last season. So essentially, what they're saying is, and hypothesizing based on what happened last year, that if you move the kickoff and move the touchback this year from the 30 to the 35, you're going to have even twice as many kickoff returns as you did last year. And I guess the answer to the question is that worth it for you as a fan? Obviously, you're not the ones voting, but for you as a fan, I've heard a lot of people say it's just stupid. Why do they keep doing this? Do you want to see that, or would you rather just say, no, 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 who cares? Keep it at the 30. I don't care to see a kickoff return and just let it be a play that kind of doesn't matter. It did matter a little more last year. I believe in the playoffs last year, though, the kickoff return rate was a bit down. Now, one alternative to be considered here is moving the kicker back 5 yards. However, as he writes, sources believe kickers these days are so good they could still reach the end zone with enough regularity backed up, you know, if they wanted to do that anyway. So maybe they could do both. It's really interesting. So we'll see. We'll see what the league decides to do. But that is one of the rules proposals on the docket. I do think it's really interesting what the Detroit Lions proposed in a couple of different aspects. Okay. First of all, the penalty of defensive holding and illegal contact not being a free first down and only being a 5 yard penalty. There are unintended consequences, right? The unintended consequences are guy is getting beat 10 yards down the field. He knows he's going to get beat for a touchdown. He just grabs somebody by the jersey. Would have been an easy touchdown. So now you're saying, well, that's only a 5 yard penalty. And if it's not a first down, it's not a first down. If you're the offensive team, you're going to be mad about that. But I do think it's way too penal right now, as it stands, and it always has been, to give a automatic first down on a regular holding or, you know, illegal contact. If it's third down and 10 and it happens 5 yards downfield, it's an automatic first down. Now, I know why. As I just said, you're possibly taking away a really easy catch for a first down. You know what we saw a lot of last year? Defensive line holding calls. Way more than normal, I should say. Like, how many times last year in a game you'd be watching and go, wait a minute, holding on the defensive line? They focused on that last year. In this scenario, right now, that's an automatic first down. That's a defensive lineman holding an offensive lineman. That's an automatic first down. This rule would change that as well. And then, of course, you have the bylaws and the resolutions, and one of those is the Detroit Lions also proposing that the wild card team, if they have a better record than a division champion, would actually be the higher seed when it came to the playoffs. Most of you I've heard from, at Sal Sports on social, if you want to do it that way, that's where I've heard a lot of people from, say they don't like this rule because what's the incentive and what's the reward then from winning your division? My counter to that is the reward is you still make the playoffs, even if you're in a really bad division and you go 9-8. You still make the playoffs. That's the reward. You would still make the playoffs regardless of how bad your division is. In this day and age, you could get an 8-9 division winner. We had one at exactly 500 a few years ago. Let's see if this would happen last year, by the way. Let's see. 14-3 Minnesota Vikings. Yeah, the 14-3 Minnesota Vikings were a wild card. Two different division winners only had 10 wins. The Washington Commanders, how about this? This is really interesting. I didn't even realize this. Last year, the 5, 6, and 7 seeds in the NFC all had better records than the 3 and 4 seeds. All of them. The Green Bay Packers had 11 wins. They were the final wildcard team. They had a better record than two division winners. That is why the Lions are making this proposal, because they were almost in the same situation as the Vikings. Came down to that last game. Vikings lost. They go to 14-3 and have to be the 5 seed and go on the road. And then, of course, they lost. Lots of stuff to discuss here. We'll get with Ben Ostro. He is at Football Zebras. He is the founder of it and does a great job at that website. Lots of good information there, and we're going to talk with him about some of these rules proposals coming next week at the NFL owners' meetings. Ben Ostro up next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Micah Hyde joins me at 11 a.m. Thanks for being with me on a Tuesday. All right, next week, really Sunday it begins, but mostly Monday, Tuesday into Wednesday down in West Palm Beach. It is the annual league meetings, the NFL owners' meetings. Lots of stuff's going to be discussed, including, of course, this is where a lot of the rules get taken care of. They're going to be on the schedule for the owners to vote on from the competition committee. Joining us right now on the West Her Hotline, we've talked to him a couple times before, and yes, Josh, you'll have to bring him up. It's Ben Ostro, founder and editor-in-chief at Football Zebras. Ben, good to talk to you again. It's Sal Capaccio here in Buffalo. Thanks for doing this today.
Sure thing. Great to talk to you.
All right, Ben, so we have a few rules that have been proposed. Actually, fewer than normal, I would say, this year. But let's talk about them a little bit. I think the one that catches everybody's attention is the rules proposal by the Detroit Lions to eliminate the automatic first down for a defensive holding or illegal contact penalty and just go with the 5 yards. How do you digest this? Give us a reason why it is already an automatic first down and why you think teams would want that to be eliminated.
Well, we often hear baseball has the dead ball era, and that's pretty much applies to football from like 1920 to 1940, 45, thereabouts. When they started to open up some of the rules against the offense, and it was at that time that they got a dedicated rules person, somebody from George Halas's orbit, a guy named Shorty Ray, and he was sitting there with a stopwatch and timing between plays and doing all sorts of things to speed up the game and eliminate these 0-0, 3-0, 7-0 scores. And basically his mantra going forward, and they've kept up with this, is you're not going to penalize the offense. It's an offensive game. You're not going to give these advantages to the defense. So I understand where they're coming from, where they feel that it's a little bit too punitive to have an automatic first down. A little weird that they chose just defensive holding and illegal contact. Pretty much anything that occurs after the snap on defense, with the exception of running into the kicker, that's going to be an automatic first down. So, so it's kind of cherry-picked a couple of the defensive holding and illegal contact. But again, yeah, it's an offensive game. They will promote rules to promote the offense. And that's probably why that proposal doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I feel like that's one that's probably going to die on the vine a little bit, right? So it's a little bit too radical. And I agree with you. I don't think that'll wind up going anywhere. We'll see. All right, so Green Bay essentially proposes to eliminate the tush-push. But then again, if you read more into it, people say, well, not really, because the way that they're proposing it is to eliminate a player lined up directly behind the snapper and pushing him. So what is the difference here? Can we parse this a little bit?
Well, they're saying that you can't push your body weight against the teammate who lined up behind the snapper and then received the snap. So it's the quarterback. They're trying to describe the quarterback, but not eliminate any other possibilities. But, you know, the way the rule is crafted, immediately at the snap, pusher throws body weight against a teammate, lined up directly behind. I mean, it's like they're describing the tush-push exactly.
Right.
And we originally had assisting the runner being push or pull. But it was always officiated that, you know, when you're close to the goal line, for instance, yeah, there's a lot of pushing. It's like, are you pushing the runner? Are you pushing the pile? There's like hands and everything like that. They were not expected to officiate that so hard, where they would have to get so detailed and to find, you know, oh, okay, that one was pushing the runner when you're in this big scrum at the goal line. Until it became a design play, you know, that was a non-issue. And so eventually it just kind of came out of the rule book. They're like, we can't really officiate this way, and so it was dropped from the rule book, and it's just pulling the runner. And so this is a way to kind of craft this in specifically to reach into the tush push playbook, but then exclude everything at the goal line. But aiding the runner is not called very often anyway, because the last time, and you'll remember this in Buffalo maybe. The AFC Divisional in 91, the Chiefs pulled Rob Thomas on a short pass, and that's the last flag that was thrown for aiding the runner some, you know, 35 years ago there. So it was a decline because they didn't get the first down, so the Bills declined it. So there's your little trivia nugget to impress people at the sports bar.
Very cool. All right. So I think that what's confusing for people here about this rule, though, Ben, is it says specifically lined up directly behind the snapper and receives the snap immediately at the snap. So what you're saying, that's right. That's the quarterback. I think people are looking at it as someone lined up directly behind the quarterback. That's not what this says. This is specifically referencing the quarterback, and then someone would push him. Now, look, I will tell you, even though the Bills have been very good at it and they're great with Josh Allen at it, I do believe that the pushing forward should fall under the aiding the runner rule. And actually, Sean McDermott, who's on the competition committee, has kind of indicated that he wouldn't mind seeing this rule be put in place to ban this because of safety concerns. The issue is there's really no data, Ben, that shows that there's been a safety concern about this play.
Well, and that's when you would see the competition committee move the needle on that. If we had, God forbid, something happens on one of these. But even if that, you know, if it's a freak occurrence, you know, it's not going to initiate a rule change. But, you know, basically they're saying that, yeah, there's no data to support that that's any more dangerous than any other play. And, again, it comes back to when you get into the competition committee, you know, the teams can toss around whatever proposal they want. When it gets to the competition committee, they're looking at specific things like how are we going to officiate it? What's in, what's out, you know, very specific things. So they're going to look at, they probably looked at every tush-push play for the last 5 years or however long it's been going, and probably some older ones as well, and just went through, is this it? It's, you know, are we going to count this? This is close. It's not, they didn't line up that way. So they take the detailed approach to that, and that's probably why they did not pick up that proposal and run with it.
Ben Ostro joining me here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. He is the founder and editor-in-chief over at Football Zebras. All right, operationally, the overtime rule has been changed a lot. We know it changed after the Bills-Chiefs game in 2021, the epic game that came down to, you know, the overtime and the Chiefs getting one possession. And now another rule going forward is, and this we've seen this before, let's get it to both teams possessing, even in the regular season, to make it more in line with what the playoff rule is. What have you just kind of gathered from how this has gone and what the momentum is, and do you think that they'll eventually do this?
Well, I think the competition committee didn't pick up this one as well because it reverts back to the 15-minute overtime, first of all, or, you know, the maximum 15-minute overtime. They set it back to 10 in 2017, and sort of the reason was that, well, we don't want to have too many snaps when the team's playing a Sunday night, then they go into Thursday or something like that. So, which didn't seem to be that much of a big deal. If you're going to extend past a field goal, and we've seen injuries there where, you know, on those where it would have ordinarily been sudden death, and, yeah, there's players that have season-ending injuries in that extra time there. So, you know, it does happen, but adding this extra possession after a touchdown, and you're going to be constrained to the 15 minutes, it really kind of puts the damper on getting two full possessions in. If one was a drive for a touchdown as opposed to a field goal, you know, even with a field goal, they can go from 10 down to 2 minutes and really short time on the opponent. So I really don't see them picking that up, especially because it kind of overrides the player safety concern that the competition committee advanced in 2017.
All right, Ben, let's talk about this kickoff stuff, because obviously here we are again. Last year they moved the touchback from the 25 to the 30. Kickoff returns did increase, but they like what they saw and they want even more. So now it looks like it's going to be discussed. It's not a formal rule proposal right now, but the competition committee will discuss next week moving it from the 30 to the 35. I was at the combine in Indianapolis, and I will tell you, as you probably know, there seems to be quite a bit of momentum. A lot of people will believe this is going to happen, which is why teams are signing kickoff return specialists, including LaVisca Chenault here in Buffalo a couple of weeks ago. What are the pros and cons and how they're going to work through this as far as the touchback going to the 35-yard line in your mind?
Yeah, and this was pretty much a foregone conclusion while the ink was still wet on the rule last year, that they would be evaluating it, tweaking it, taking a look at, you know, what exactly we are doing, where the formation lines are, what needs to be adjusted. And those are the two big ones, are the kickoff spot and the touchback spot. They originally proposed the 35-yard line for the kickoff in the air to the end zone. It would still be a touchback to the 20 if it lands short and then rolls into the end zone. But they originally had 35, and they made a change just prior to passing to make it a touchback to the 30. So is that same group of coaches that pushed back on it last year, are they going to be vocal enough this year to push back on changing the touchback line? Maybe not. You know, maybe the competition committee is like, hey, you know what? This is what we're doing to save the kickoff. If we're just going to have a perfunctory play here, you know, we're not really going to be doing very much. We might as well just start on the possession on the 20 or do some other modification there. The kickoff spot, that's an interesting thing because then that sort of gets you towards maybe not reaching the landing zone, but these kickers, they can make it. I mean, all the lines are the same for a safety kick from the 20, and they pretty much they can almost make the end zone from the 20. So it's not really going to affect it too much, but yeah, they'll probably change their statistics. And it's basically a numbers thing. They're looking at a percentage that made it to the end zone. How are we going to change it? What do we want to change? How much do we want to change it? Because if it flips completely the other way, that's not exactly what they're looking for. So they're going to be tweaking this. It was proposed as a one-year rule change. So they were definitely going to be looking at this at the end of the season. And, so it'd be interesting to see where they wind up. And I think that there's going to be some minor changes in there.
Ben, let's go back to the AFC Championship game. Josh Allen doesn't get the spot on the fourth down, very controversial. A lot of people have pointed out how the spot takes place, and there's some confusion, and fans don't really know. You have one official coming in from one side, you have one official coming in from the other side. He gives the ball to somebody, he marks it down there when the other official had maybe a more forward spot. Can you explain to our listeners what the process is for spotting the football after a play?
So I'm about to get ratioed, aren't I? So basically, in this particular situation, and we covered it live, that it appeared that to the casual viewer that there were dueling signals from the line judge and the down judge. In actuality, the line judge didn't put up his hand to indicate dead ball, which is a signal to his partner across the field is, I don't have something here. You're going to have to rule on it. It's more towards your side of the field. And so, yeah, at that point, you know, it does get into a pile and you have to make judgment calls. We broke this down on a podcast and we spent 10 minutes just on mm-hmm. this play. So it's like there are a lot, if something's very simple like that, there's a lot of intricacy to it. But when it disappears into a pile, yeah, you have to make a call. Even though you don't see that ball and you wait to make sure that there's no fumble and you process the play and you say, this is my gut feeling as to where that ball is. Even though it's obscured from my view, it is on the other side of that player. All I see is bodies between me, but I can see where his shoulder is and I can see where his helmet is and his body. And so I can make the judgment call that he's holding it at waist level or a little bit above waist level, and his waist did not cross the line. So it's really just kind of a gut check at that point. You've been in this role for however many years. You go all the way down to high school football, all the way on up. You just make that call in real time, and then you look. You know, we have the ability to look at it on replay. And in this particular case, because it disappeared into that pile, there was nothing that was conclusive to overturn it. You have a feeling that it might have been a first down, but that's not enough to do a reversal. And so in the long run, you know, any of these spotting things about using, you know, lasers for the first down or the new Hawkeye measurement that they're going to do, the officials still have to put the ball on the ground and make a spot before there's a measurement by this new Hawkeye system that gets rid of the chains. So, you know, it's still you need a human to make a human decision in that moment. I mean, otherwise, you know, if we're starting to do this, you know, upstairs, then we might as well just play Madden.
What about chips and balls that we hear from so many fans all the time? Well, if a chip is a ball, the chip will just tell you where the front of the ball was. I mean, how realistic is that?
Sure. Well, there's no chips in knees and chins and elbows and all of that. So, I mean, it could help conceivably. But again, the competition committee is going to look at that and say, what is the return on this? We're going to put the chip in the ball, and it might help us. And, it, you know, that may be part of a future revision to some extent, that there might be some assistability with the chip in the ball. But in the long run, that's going to be such a small subset of plays. It's really going to be, in most cases, you got to make the call. Where's that knee down? Where's the player down? And, you know, where is that ball at that particular time? And to kind of try and make that call in replay, you know, is putting a lot into the replay area. You know, you got to make that call on the field. And, you know, on the flip side of the coin, you got to make that first down the definitive thing. You don't put it in the official's hands. You make that definitive and get that first down.
A couple more for you here, Ben, before we go, and I appreciate your time this morning. Ben Ostro from Football Zebras. I threw it out to my listeners. What rule would you like to see change? And these are the two that most commonly come up. So let's just walk through these before we leave. Number one, touchback. When a ball gets fumbled through the end zone, it's a touchback. And a lot of fans say that's too penal. And we've seen this actually come up in some of the rules proposals. But why has the league said, no, we're going to keep it that way? And you know what I'm talking about. You're at the 2-yard line. You fumble the ball, goes into the end zone, out of bounds. You lose the ball. Whereas some people say, why don't you just keep the ball and put it back at the 20?
Well, I don't remember the outcry that Leon Lett was sort of jobbed on that fumble return at that particular time. So same general situation where, you know, the ball goes out of bounds in the end zone. I mean, I don't, you know, Tom Beebe did recover it, but, you know, it's same general principle where it's, you know, fumbled through the end zone.
Well, it happened real quick. It happened. I think the one it really came out was a couple years ago in the playoffs. The Cleveland Browns were playing the Chiefs, and I think it was Baker Mayfield that this happened to, and the Chiefs lost the ball because of the rule instead of, and people said, we need to change this.
Well, it comes down to ball security. And we said that, you know, like I said, that we give the offense most of the deference, mm-hmm. but here's a case where they give the defense something. It's like, okay, yeah. your back's up against the wall. If they cannot hold onto the ball, you know, you've done your job. You have defended that goal. So if it goes out of bounds in the end zone, you know, you have a limited space to work with to make that recovery. If a runner is angling for the pylon and just before they lose that ball, and, oh, it just went over. I'll get it back at the one. Or maybe, you know, mm-hmm. some people have said, well, they get it back at the 20 or something like that. It's still, you know, the defense made the play. They kept him out of the end zone. And so I think that there has to be more of an emphasis on ball security near that goal line, knowing that rule is in play, and, you know, and which has been that way on all levels and has been that way for more than a century. It's one of those things that's really baked in that the defense has to defend that goal. And in that particular case, they did do that and did not allow a recovery in their end zone. So in that case, I'm fine with the rule. I know it's a little punitive. It seems a little punitive, but, you know, it's one of those things that the defense has going for them.
All right, last one. Do you ever see a change in the pass interference rule to go to the college rule, which is this is another one we get a lot, which is it should be a spot foul like in college, a 15-yard penalty like in college, not a spot foul. Do you ever see in all of your talk any momentum
maximum.
For that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it would be a 15-yard maximum.
Yes.
And, we've seen occasionally you see these 40, 35-yard penalties for DPI and you know, pass interference is probably one of the most difficult things to officiate. And, yeah, it gets right more often, whether it's a call or no call. It gets called correctly more often by a wide margin. And it's those ones that stick out that, you know, that they are miscalls. And that's the one – those are the ones that seem to drive in any situation. Those are the ones that seem to drive – rule change, you know, the upcry of mm-hmm. let's change this rule. Well, it's kind of isolated to these situations. And the rule kind of, it's staying at spot foul for years that they have looked at it. But I think that the overwhelming thought is that, you know, you're going to have a defensive back that's going to say, you know, I'll take the 15 and I'll make it look like it was an accident. I won't make it look intentional, because that's the override, is that, well, if it was an intentional pass interference, then you would get it downfield wherever it happened. You know, these teams are, you know, these players are very skilled at getting away with just enough and maybe, you know, getting away with a pull here or a tug there. And, you know, so something like that, you know, you're going to see more players that exploit that rule in that situation. And then again, it goes back to not giving the offense that advantage that's kind of baked in.
Ben, thank you so much for this today. Ben Ostro, editor-in-chief, founder as well, Football Zebras. Lots of great stuff at footballzebras.com. Check it out. Check their site. They got a podcast. You guys are doing a great job. Always a great resource. Thanks a lot for helping us out today, as the rules will be voted on next week. Thank you again.
Sure thing. We got an exclusive up there today about four officials going back to the UFL. So if everyone wants to check that out, we, you know, there's a little more accountability in officiating, and I think people will like to see that.
I like that. You guys also have the assignments every week during the season. It's a great site for a lot of official resources. Thank you very much, Ben.
Thanks. Take care.
Yeah, you got it. That is Ben Ostro. All right, we'll take a timeout. Really late to the break. Got to come right back. We'll go to another break, and then Micah Hyde is going to join me at 11 a.m. here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It's Sweet 16 week later in the week. Thursday, Friday, Sweet 16. Then Saturday, Sunday is the Elite Eight. Get to the Final Four next weekend. Championship game that Monday night. Tomorrow, I will be with Mike Shope over at Roswell Park. We are going to be broadcasting live his show. I won't be on in this time slot tomorrow. I'll be on with Mike Shope in the afternoon tomorrow over at Roswell Park. So looking forward to that. And it's kicking off the Ride for Roswell, and obviously a great cause. Another great cause every year is the Micah Hyde Charity Softball Game for the Imagine for Youth Foundation. And it's my pleasure and honor every year to be a part of that as the on-field MC. Once again, it's happening this year. It's going to be on Sunday, May 4th. And welcoming right now on the Wester Hotline is former Bills safety Micah Hyde. Good morning, Micah. How are you, buddy?
Oh, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Where are you right now? Where are you?
I'm in sunny San Diego right now.
Ooh, it's nice out there. I mean, is this, I know you guys like to travel a little bit. Now that you are officially retired, how much time is spent in San Diego and how much time is going to be spent around the world?
You know, I would love to be traveling around the world right now, but we got, you know, kids in school and MJ and T-ball and stuff. So it's kind of holding us down right now to their schedule. So we got some things planned in the future, and, you know, obviously got the softball game, got a few other Madden events planned in the near future. But after that, you know, we plan on trying to get out of here for a little bit, but that's not going to be for a couple months.
What about coaching? You coaching T-ball? How involved are you?
Yes, yeah, so I'm an assistant coach on the on the MJ T-ball team. I'm not a big fan. He's the Red Sox, so. You know, I'm not a big fan of the Red Sox, but you know, one of the parents on the team is has some ties to Boston, so that's why they picked it. So, yeah, I'm assistant coach, and it's awesome, man. It's so fun to go out there every Wednesday night to practice, and Saturday is game day. So, we got to get the boys hyped and ready to swing the bat. So, it's good times right now.
Before we get to the softball game, Micah, you did announce officially your retirement recently from the National Football League. What went into that decision? And, you know, were you sure you were going to do it at the time? How much did you wrestle with it? It sounded like it was something, what you told us, you really kind of knew it was going to happen after the 2024 season.
Yeah, exactly. So after the 23 season, you know, I you know, it was a long season. Obviously, injuries played a huge part into how, you know, the season ended for me. And so, you know, all last year, last offseason, I was, you know, still working out. And I told you guys once I got back to Buffalo in December that, you know, I was staying in shape and doing all that type of stuff. But, you know, I knew once I went back for those last couple of months, I was done. And you know, that opening press conference that I had in December, I basically said the same thing, like, I'm here to help any way I can. I don't even know if it's going to be playing football or not, but, you know, Sean and Bean were able to give me a chance to go back there and, you know, just be a part of it and help any way I could. And so I did that, and, you know, we came up a little bit short. But at the end of the day, man, it was kind of a cool way for me to close that chapter of my life. And I, you know, it's honestly an honor to be able to be in that building around those players, coaches, and, you know, staff members, and kind of, you know, say that I'm done. So it was awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you, what did it mean for you to be a Buffalo Bill? You came in 2017. You were really, you and Jordan were the first, you know, players that Sean signed that year when he took over, and you were really a big part of, the rebirth of this franchise, and you stay here in Buffalo for 7 years, 8 years counting last year, actually. What did it mean for you to be a Buffalo Bill in your career?
You know, when I first got there in 17, I didn't really know. You know, I was kind of, I said it to you before, I was like, what the hell am I doing, man? I showed up to the facility. It was not nearly as nice as Green Bay. You know, didn't have the winning culture that Green Bay had and all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, man, we just, you know, with the likes of Poe and Tredavious and D-Doc and Lano and, you know, the following year getting Josh, Tremaine, Terry, you know, just all those guys, and not to mention the guys we came in with Hauska and DeMarco and Lorenzo and Kyle, all these guys just that we, you know, stepped in the building with. We just went to work, man. We just put our heads down and worked. And next thing you know, stuff just started going our way, winning a lot of games. And to look back, you know, over the last 8 years to see where it was at to where it is now is awesome. And obviously, you know, we want to continue to keep moving forward and get the job done and win that Super Bowl. That's always the goal. But I'm forever a fan of that organization because of the people in that community and people in that building and the players and the coaches, like I mentioned. And to give me that last chance to go back just meant the world to myself and my family. So, you know, we say goodnight to our kids every night. We say, I love you, and they say, go Bills. That's where we're at. You know, we forever going to be Bills fans. And so we just love Western New York.
You were a part of some great moments, obviously. You mentioned that 2017 season. I think the thing that sticks out, if I asked a random Bills fan, Micah, like, what's a great Micah Hyde moment? They may say it's breaking the drought and him being a part of that team in the locker room and watching that. Yeah, there's individual moments. But for fans, is that for you number one? Is that the top of the list? Where would you put that?
That's definitely up there. I mean, we've won a lot of, you know, big games in Buffalo, playoff games, regular season games. I just think it's honestly the people, man. It's the people and that I was able to do it with. And I think that, you know, 30 years from now, you know, I'll obviously remember all the plays that I made and the games that we won and all that type of stuff. But, like, it's so, you know, people say this all the time. It's about the people you meet. It's about the relationships. It really is. Like, if you know, I could never talk about football ever again, but I could just, you know, be able to hang out with, you know, Poe and Tredavious and Taryn and, you know, call up Sean and call up Bean and, you know, hang out with Josh out here in California. Like, just stuff like that is where I'm happiest, you know. And so that's really the most magical moments for me being in Buffalo.
When you signed with the Buffalo Bills, you were 27 years old. 8 years later, Josh Allen is the MVP. He's about to get married. You've seen him on and off the field grow. What have you seen from your buddy Josh Allen as the quarterback and as the person?
I'm extremely proud of him, man. And obviously, he comes from a good background, so it's not like he developed this over the last 8 years of being in Buffalo. He's the perfect person to represent, you know, Buffalo, New York, and the Bills organization. But just the way he's grown, you know, mentally on the football field, but then mentally off the football field, like, just the way, like, life is coming to him. And, you know, he's the MVP of the National Football League. That there's one guy in the league that, you know, gets that honor. And there's no worry in my mind that that's going to change who he is. Like, he's just a homegrown dude. You could talk to him about anything. You could, you know, we've said this all the time. He's just a big ass kid that goes out there and plays football. And I, most of the time, go ahead and think he realizes what the hell he's doing out there and how he's, you know, running over defensive ends and running past corners, and, like, he's just a freak of nature. And so just forever thankful to be able to cross paths with him. You know, I'm lucky enough already to cross paths with Aaron Rodgers and then go right into Josh Allen. So, man, I'm forever thankful for not only being able to see him play, but also our relationship off the field.
Micah Hyde joining me here on the Western Hotline. Micah, you got a chance to work a little bit alongside Cole Bishop last year, going into his second year, a big year for the second-year player. What did you see from him last year, and where do you think that this kid can go?
Yeah, I would say when I first got back there in December, just seeing how big Cole is. You know, he's bigger than what I thought he was. You know, he's bigger than me. He's bigger than Poe. Like, he's bigger than what we've seen in the safety room around for a while. And so that was eye-opening. He's very athletic. He's very smart. And I think that once the years start to pile up for him, he's going to be a great player in the league. You know, you don't just hop in day one and start, you know, making plays and becoming the all-pro safety. You got to experience some stuff. And I think as the years go on, you know, you start to learn how the game moves and how the playbook is and when you can take risks and, you know, reading the quarterback and reading the tight ends or receivers that you're guarding and stuff like that. So it's really a mental game. So I feel like as he gets more experience down the road, he'll develop that. And he's going to be a great player. And obviously he has, you know, Sean looking over him. He has Bobby. He has Joe. You know, he's playing alongside Rapp, which I love playing alongside Rapp. He's a smart guy. I love him to death. And so, you know, and then he has someone like D-Ham in there too, with a little bit of experience, and they just brought him back. So there's going to be a little bit like a competitive battle, as there always is in the safety room and in each and every room. And so it's going to spark some good competition between all of us or between all
what
of
did Bobby, what did Bobby Babich mean to you as a position coach, and now him being a coordinator and seeing that happen for you? What does that mean?
Oh, well, first of all, I'm extremely happy for him, just the way he's been able to work his ass off and get up the ranks to defensive coordinator now. And obviously Sean trusted him enough to go out there and develop a game plan and work together and, you know, get the defensive positions to win ball games. So I'm extremely proud of him. But I've always said, you know, Bobby's one of the smartest coaches I've ever been around. Like, when we got there in 17, you know, he's only, what, 4 or 5 years older than me, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, he would have his time for, I'm like, dude, like, shut up. Like, well, you're just talking so much, but I feel like he does it on purpose to a point where he just has, you have that voice in your head as you're playing that football game where you know, like, okay, what's Bobby saying right here? How does Bobby see this? How do you know? So he kind of takes what you learn in the classroom and he just installs it to you one by one. And it may be sometimes he's just pressing a lot, but then, you know, you get in the game, you make a play, and he kind of looks at you like, yeah, you know, we talked about that. So he's going to prepare each and every player on the defense to go out there and play well. You just have to listen to every single thing that he's saying and be very detailed with your film study, and you'll go out there and make a lot of plays.
Micah Hyde's charity softball game is coming back to Buffalo, Salem Field, on May 4th of this year. Micah, even though you're not a member officially of the Buffalo Bills roster anymore, why is it important for you to maintain this relationship with Buffalo and the charity softball game?
Yeah, you know, this is a big thing for me, Sal, because even last year, you know, as I spoke to you, you know, I wasn't really on the team back then. And I was like, man, you know, this is kind of weird. Should I do it? Should I not do it? And, I, you know, at the end of the day, like, this is something that we started in Buffalo, and our, you know, foundation has really benefited from this game. And, you know, we love going back and hosting this event. And so for me, in my mind, I'm like, how do we kind of make this thing evolve into something else and to something we can carry, you know, going forward? Obviously my name's attached to it, so everyone associates the game with me. But it, you know, we're trying to evolve it into a overall just charity game. And so that's why, this year, all the proceeds, every single dollar is going to be split evenly between all the players on the team that have nonprofits. And so right now, I think there's 8 guys. So whatever the pot is, we're all just splitting it, I think, 8 different ways. So that's a way to be able to generate some money for each and every guy's nonprofit. And ultimately, like, yeah, we do a lot of stuff in Buffalo and in Western New York. But at the same time, you know, when you got 8 different guys on the team that have 8 different foundations that are all pinpoint in Western New York, it gives that community more and more, you know, role models, more voices to be able to go into these schools and go into these whatever it may be to talk to these kids and stuff like that. So you know, I think that the way this game is going is really cool, and so we're just asking the community to continue to support it, because it's no longer just about the Imagine for Youth and what we're doing. It's about every player's nonprofit that's on the team.
No doubt about it. And people can still go to Bisons.com and at the Salem Field box office as well to check into tickets for the May 4th game. Tell us a little bit and our listeners about Imagine for Youth. Yes, there's a lot of charities involved, a lot of players who have foundations in charities, but you've been with Imagine for Youth for a long time. What is this all about?
So Imagine for Youth, man, we just go out there. We help. Honestly, we just help kids any way we can. That's what it's come down to. You know, whether if it's academics, athletics, even, you know, medical, we've been able to tap into different communities, whether if it's Buffalo, which a lot of it has been in Buffalo because of the softball game and generate all the revenue there. But then my hometown of Foster, Ohio, and even, you know, the in Northwest Ohio territory, and then into Iowa, where I went to school, and even into Detroit. So we've been able to tap into some cool communities and do some cool things, Kicks for Kids events where we hand out, you know, a whole bunch of shoes each and every Christmas. Obviously, you guys know about the softball game, my football camp in my hometown. That's 500 free kids in June. So there's so many events that we're doing throughout the year that, you know, the softball game is a huge fundraiser for us to be able to continue to do the things that we do in Western New York. And so we're always going to try to give back to the kids, because obviously that's our future. And we're trying to develop good kids. And I think that's what this world kind of needs, is just good kids that have, you know, role models and, you know, are being steered in the right direction so that they can impact the future and impact the kids, you know, for them in the future.
Team Lammy Productions, a big part of it. There's a tailgate. There's a silent auction. There's a whole bunch of great stuff that happens. That we pack the house there. I'm honored to be a part of it. I really appreciate it. It's going to be a great day on Sunday, May 4th. I appreciate you coming back to Buffalo and doing all of this. I mean, when you come back, what do you like to do when you come back to Buffalo? You hang out with people, go get some wings, right? You and Amanda, it's a big part of your life still, and it's going to be for a long time.
Yeah. So we still haven't technically sold the house yet.
Okay.
We're going to go back to the house, and I'm sure everyone from Michigan and Ohio, everyone's going to crash the Buffalo house. We call it the Hyde Hotel for the past 8 years, because everybody just shows up and
I love it.
Sleeps on the floor and does all that type of stuff. So, you know, we're excited for everybody. We're going to get some wings. We're going to, you know, walk around probably our neighborhood with, you know, a lot of people that we've met over the years. And I'm sure they'll be excited. We'll be excited. So, My goal, Amanda and I's goal for this game each and every year, is to make it a reunion to where we can host and see the community and see the people that really helped us out throughout the year. So we love it.
And by the way, on Instagram, everybody, you can check it out, Hyde Charity Softball. Just go to Instagram, Hyde Charity Softball. There's updates on who's playing and what's going on. One of my favorite stories is last year you came back for the press conference. And by the way, there will be another press conference later next month, and we'll bring that to you. Michael will be here for that, and he'll tell you all about it. But when Amanda told me that she got up one morning, she thought you were sleeping, and then all of a sudden you walked in through, like, the garage door, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And you said, "I just ran a 10K, and you PR'd, and you hadn't even run it in months." Dude, that's sick.
Yeah, you know, I like to do some crazy things to see if I can do it. Yesterday, Amanda took me to a first Pilates class, which she said hi, and she mentioned
it. Wow.
She took me to a Pilates class, and so, you know, we were both on that, I don't even know what it's called, on the little machine thing, just shaking, you know, abs were shaking like crazy and all that stuff. So, you know, I'm always down to do any type of workout that's gonna push me a little bit. So, you know, I never know what it might be. I might start swimming tomorrow, or who knows.
Well, that's great, because I want to wrap up with what the future holds for Micah Hyde, because you do all these things, you never know where life's going to take you, and I appreciate that, and I love it. But your buddy, your old teammate, Kyle Williams, is now coaching at LSU. He's a defensive line coach, as we've seen. Yeah. I never thought Kyle would go into coaching. I thought it would interrupt his golf game too much, right? You're starting to coach a little bit. You had a taste of doing a little bit of that over the last couple of years. People have asked me, does Micah Hyde have any ambition to ever be a coach at that level?
I will never say never. But right now, I love where my life is. I love, you know, where we're at with the family, with the wife, you know, us, you know, taking the kids to school and getting them ready for, you know, the little sports and stuff like that. And all the, you know, side stuff that we have with the foundation, also some projects, some real estate projects that we have on the side. And so it's keeping us busy. So right now, I would not say no. I would never coach. But, you know, if the opportunity presents itself and it's a deal that we can't pass up, you never know.
Micah, give Amanda our love. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on. And once again, I'm honored to be a part of the charity softball game and being a part of the Imagine for Youth and everything that you guys got going on. So we look forward to it. And thanks a lot again.
Man, Sal, can't wait to see you, man. Well, it's going to be a good day on May 4th, and let's go have some fun.
You got it. We'll keep promoting that for you. Thanks a lot, Micah. Have a great day, buddy.
Yeah, you too. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right, you got it. That is Micah Hyde, former Bills safety. A great day, by the way. May 4th is going to be awesome, and you just hope, you know, that it's warm enough, right? Because you never know what you get that time of year, but it's warm enough to play softball, and it's dry because we've had, but I will tell you, we had a rain a few years ago, Josh. This is one of those deals where it was raining in the morning. They had to put the tarp on, and there were a few guys who went out there and a couple offensive linemen who were doing like belly flops on the tarp, basically.
I was at that one, actually. I was sitting in the rain for that one. It was a great time, though. Like, it stopped raining about, I don't know, like 2 innings in or so. It was just like lightly drizzling for a little bit, but it was a great time. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. So good. So you go to it. You know, this is it's a really fun event. It's a, you know, and Josh, 16,000 people. I mean,
yeah,
they sell out a charity softball game.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, everyone wants to see Josh Allen hit a ball onto the highway. Like, he's done it before.
No doubt about it. And we'll see what they do with the charity softball, the home run hitting contest, the derby that happens as well. So it's going to be a really great time. That is May 4th. That is, again, let me just give you the information here, folks, okay? Tickets are on sale right now, May 4th, Salem Field in Buffalo. To secure your tickets for the 5th annual Micah Hyde Charity Softball Game, make sure you go to HydeCharitySoftball.com or you can go to Bisons.com, the Salem Field box office as well. Speaking of that, opening day this week on Friday is opening day. You can just go down there to the game. You can go up to the box office, talk about the softball game. You can go online, bisons.com. You can go to hidecharitysoftball.com. You can check it out. So make sure you do that. It's going to be really, really awesome day on May 4th. Mike is going to be back in town next month for a press conference. It's going to be right around the draft time, a little before that. So he'll be in town for that. And we'll talk to him a little bit more. And I think that's actually going to happen at Salem Field. So we'll bring you that as well. In the meantime, speaking of a month, that's when the NFL draft is coming up. So let's dive into that a little bit when we come back. Just want to talk about the Bills roster, where they stand right now. Some options for them at pick number 30, how that looks going forward. Because there's still some time between now and when the NFL draft is and starts on April 24th, less than a month from today. There's still some work they can do on the roster. Still some free agent stuff they can do. But in the meantime, the draft is front and center. Saw some theories floating around about what the Bills might want to do or what they could do. And I love this time of year because it's that time of year to kind of conjure up your own trades, your own thoughts, be creative. We'll do that when we come back on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR. Apparently, I did not see this until today. Josh, did you see this? That apparently there was a quote going around from Deion Sanders about his son, Shador, and he said he wants him in New York, or it better be New York. There was something like that. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. That's interesting.
But he has said he said it's a lie. He said this is not true, that this happened. Let's hope it's New York was what was quoted in there's some Twitter accounts and there's these big quotes, let's hope it's New York, and Deion has come out and said this is a lie. We're very thankful for whatever God chooses for them, meaning his kids. So yeah,
I wonder if it's some weird PR tactic, right? Like, oh no, I didn't say that, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
that's weird. Interesting.
There's a Twitter account, I'm sorry, an Instagram account, apparently called Football Forever, that says, Deion Sanders on where his son, Shador Sanders, will be drafted. Let's hope it's New York, is the quote. And then under it, Deion writes, this is a lie. We're thankful for whatever God chooses for them. Oh, man. You know, and I love Deion, I do. I think that he's great for college sports. He's one of the most fantastic athletes I've ever watched. I think Bo Jackson might be the greatest. I think Deion is right there. He's amazing. And I think he really surpassed my expectations as a coach. And listening to people like Lewis Riddick talks about him a lot and how he's incredibly, incredibly competitive. You could see that. I do think, though, you know, if you're a team drafting him, you have to, drafting Shador, I think you have to have in the back of your head that, like, in some way, shape, or form, Deion comes with him, right? He's going to be a part of that. And that doesn't have to be a bad thing, but it might have to be something you have to manage in some way, right? Because if things do start to go south, or, you know, Shador doesn't see the field right away, is Deion, who, with his big personality and his platform, is that, does that cause a problem? Again, it doesn't have to be a bad thing. It can be a great thing to have Deion Sanders as a part, and his kid as a part of your program, and he shouldn't be held against Shador. But I think if you're a team, you have to have a way to figure out and think about, from a PR standpoint, managing that and just saying, look, his dad is this big time superstar. He's got this platform. He's always been his coach, and there's always been rumors about, remember, like, what was the guy's name? LaVar Ball. It was LaVar, right? The guy's name.
Yeah. LaMelo right? Ball's dad.
Yeah. Melo. Yeah, exactly. And like that, that's a different scenario, but you still had to deal with, whenever something would happen, him going and having these platforms that people gave him. In this case, Deion doesn't even have to have it given to him. He has one as the head coach of Colorado and who he is. So I do think you have to think about that. And at least when it comes to quarterbacks, though, this is not considered a really great, you know, quarterback class. But there are people who tell you, and, you know, Shador Sanders is, you know, a legitimate first round pick. That's not the case that he isn't, but this is not the type of quarterback class maybe we're used to, or we've seen the last couple of years. I would say, I do think Cam Ward, to me, is the best quarterback coming out in this year's class, and it is appearing more and more like he is going to be the number one overall pick, at least if you kind of look at some of the tea leaves and the pro day that he worked out. Marcel Louis-Jacques, our buddy down in Miami, he used to work here in Buffalo. He has a story up at ESPN.com about his pro day, and I guess he crushed it, did really well, and it's appearing, though, it's going closer and closer to, you know, him being the number one overall pick. That would be, of course, from the Tennessee Titans. What's interesting is, after that, let's just say the Titans take Cam Ward. If the Browns then choose, they could choose Shador Sanders, no doubt. There's a thought they're going to go Abdul Carter. And if they get Abdul Carter on opposite Myles Garrett, man, that's great. But who's the quarterback? It's Kenny Pickett. Really interesting. And obviously at three is the Giants with Shador Sanders. I don't want to see Travis Hunter go to the Patriots. I like Travis Hunter. I think he's fantastic. But right now it looks like that could very well be the case. Now, they still have some work to do around their offensive line. And at wide receiver, probably too high for a wide receiver right there. Travis Hunter can play some wide receiver. We know that. But I don't want to see Travis Hunter in a Patriots uniform. That would not sit well with me. But, you know, he's going to be very highly picked. I think he's the best overall football player in this draft, Travis Hunter. But, you know, if you need a quarterback, I think Cam Ward is probably the guy that you're going to choose here. And I do think Cam Ward has a chance to be a good NFL quarterback. Maybe not right away. And the Tennessee Titans are going to have to, if they take him or whoever, you know, really develop him. Let's go to John in Clarence Center. Hi, John. You're on WGR on the Extra Point Show.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I've seen parents getting involved at all levels that I've played. And very, very seldom does it turn out positive. I personally think Deion Sanders is an incredible athlete. But once his son is drafted, that's where it should end, right there. It puts so much pressure on management and coaches, and I just think it leads down a very bad hole. And I've seen it, like you mentioned, LaVar Ball, that happens, and you're seeing it to some level with LeBron James and his son. I just think parents should know their place when their kids get drafted and just sit back and watch their career and watch the games, be proud and enjoy it and sit back. And that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Yeah. John, I don't think many people would disagree with you in the overall sentiment of what you're saying. I don't disagree with what you're saying. It is hard sometimes for a parent, right, to do that, but especially when you get to that level, of course. I think even at the lower levels, we all do this and we all have this. And I've coached Little League, I've coached high school sports, everything. And, you know, there is the coach is the coach, the parent's the parent. But let's just take that part of it out and go to the professional level. Yeah, I mean, if you're a professional team, you draft somebody, you know, that it's a job now. It's a job. That's their career. That's their job. And I would hope that Deion is sincere and right, but he's going to care. Every parent is. I mean, you can't blame any parent for caring and want to see your kid treated well, right? But you hope that he does take that step back, because it is, he is the, I think I have this right, I think he's the only coach Shadur has ever had in football, in high school, in, and I think he was a part of the high school, maybe not the head coach, but in college, and whether it's Jackson State or Colorado, and, you know, that's an adjustment, and we'll see how Shadur reacts to it, too, wherever he goes. It's really interesting. It's an interesting dynamic with Deion, especially because of who he is. And I'm of the age now. Josh, you didn't watch Deion play, right? You're too young. You never saw Deion play. He was retired by the time you started watching football, right?
Yeah, no, I never saw him play live.
I think you understand how great he was. Have you watched highlights of him? You ever gone back and watched how incredible he was as an athlete?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, he was just, he was the guy. He changed the game.
Yeah, and not only that, but Bo Jackson gets all the credit for, and not all the credit, but he gets so much credit for, playing football and baseball. Deion did that too. he was an incredible athlete, baseball player. There was another guy, Mark Witten. He was a football and baseball player professional. There's been a few guys who've done that, but Deion was incredible. And, his name, his brand, everything. Yeah, that's going to go along with that with Shadur. With the Bills, though, they picked number 30 overall in this year's draft. And I've read a lot of mock drafts now. A lot of mocks have them taking a defensive lineman. And I think that's right. Some mocks have them taking a wide receiver. I am not in that camp right now for the Bills. Am I against them taking a wide receiver? No, that's not what I'm saying. And maybe a little bit, I guess. But here's my thought. And I'm trying to bring it from the way I read the roster. Okay, the way I read the roster. And the way I read how they operate, the Bills, which is this. Last year, they went with this everybody eats mentality. And even though they didn't have a ton of unbelievable passing stats with their pass catchers, they still had the league MVP at quarterback, won their division, and went to the AFC Championship game. I don't think this team has quite the appetite to have to go out and spend those kinds of resources on that kind of on that position. I respect the argument of anybody who says, well, they should. Now, that could change if you had a chance at a Jamar Chase or a T. Higgins, if he'd become available, or Justin Jefferson becomes a free agent, right? I get that. What I'm saying is, first round, 30th pick overall, where does that guy fit in with based on how they construct their roster and what their philosophy is? And I just don't think he does very much. It's bringing another Keon Coleman in, which is fine. But you're not, look what Keon Coleman is rookie year. Maybe it didn't go well at the end of the year, but he didn't have incredible stats, incredible numbers. It took a little while for that to start working, and it was working a little bit. I just don't see a receiver being a pick at 30 because you're going to be waiting on that guy. Whereas you have other positions which you need more critically right now to make a bigger impact. Now, look, you don't draft for need. That's not what I'm saying. Because that'll take you down a road you don't want to go. That's when you get to, we need a corner, let's take, and you get Kyrie Elam, and it just doesn't work out. You do draft a position. It's always a nuanced point. This need versus best player available. Need versus best player. It is best player available, but you have to get the nuance of this. It's best player available as long as it's at a position where you can use them. That's what it is. Because if the best player available at pick 30 is a quarterback, you're not taking a quarterback. Even though I'll tell you, take the best player available, Brandon Bean says you're taking the best player available and you stick to your board. You're not taking the true best player available if it's at a position you absolutely don't need. But if it's at a position that you're going to use them, that's where the best player available comes in. That's going to be, to me, at defensive line and at corner mostly. You could use a receiver. I just don't know how much you're going to use him compared to these other positions we're talking about. So that's why I think the Bills are right now. And Brandon, by the way, Brandon Bean was on a podcast with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Andrew Whitworth last week. I tweeted out a bunch of quotes. One of the things he said that was notable to me was, at this point, anything can change. They'd probably use more of their picks on the defensive side. I think that's a clue, folks, right there. That he's telling you right there. They're looking defense in this draft. And to me, that means their first pick is defense. I think out of their first three picks, let's say they hold their first and their two second round picks, they have three picks in the first, you know, in the first two rounds. I think it's the over under on defensive players is two. I think it's two. That's what they're going to pick. At least it might be three. I'm saying it's no less than two. They're not taking one defense and two offense. I'd be stunned at this point. It would have to really be a guy they totally fall in love with and know they're going to use him. But where's that going to happen? It's only wide receiver, unless something happens with James Cook. So one of the theories from people is, hey, maybe they think this thing with Cook is going south. They're going to draft a running back, and they're going to trade James Cook. Look, I would never say never in this league, especially after a lot of the things that we've seen from James Cook's social media and the fact that Brandon Bean, we know he's not going to pay as much as what appears James Cook wants. And this is a really good running back class. I still have a hard time getting there. He's still under contract for a year. He's still very good for what you do. They're trying to win a Super Bowl. I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibilities. I just can't see that happening right now. That's one of the theories about what the Bills could do. Another is, being creative, the Bills moving up pretty high in the draft. How high do you have to get, though, to get? You know, if it's for a defensive tackle, I would say, why? This is a really deep defensive tackle class. You don't have to do that. If it's for a corner, maybe a little different. You know, you could justify the move if someone like Will Johnson, who, by the way, has family here in Western New York, starts to fall. You know, so there's a lot of ways you could go about this. Owners meetings next week, league meetings, owners are there, GMs are there, head coaches are there. A lot of times, that's when stuff starts to percolate as far as trades, where teams want to position themselves. So we'll see where it goes. All right, we'll take a timeout, one final timeout here. Then we'll get you to Sabres Live at the top of the hour after one more segment. Sabres take on the Ottawa Senators tonight at home. So we'll touch on that a little bit when we come back, and we'll wrap up the Tuesday Extra Point Show for you here on WGR. What am I seeing? Is there something going on between Nate and Joe in a 40-yard dash?
Yep, that came up this morning.
Okay. I just saw something on social media about that. Were they yelling at each other about it?
There may or may not be a 40-yard dash coming soon. Hmm. Sometime. We don't know when, but there will be a 40-yard dash sometime soon.
I might have to enter that.
How fast do you think you can go? You think you can get faster than, what's his name, Xavier Restrepo, the Miami receiver that...
How fast did he run?
He had a decent time at the combine and then ran at Miami's Pro Day yesterday and ran a 5.8 or a 4.
Yeah,
four,
I know I can or, because no, I'm sorry, I was not, I was not 5. I was timed 4. Last year 4. At Bill. 8. Oh, 4.8. No, sorry, no, sorry. No. I'm not running 4.8. My goal is to run my age. I'll be 52 in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah.
But that's not bad for a 52-year-old
dude. No, that'd be good. I think that's the time Nate was shooting for, too. I think that was what his goal was. So if you do that, yeah, maybe you'd beat Nate.
Maybe. I mean, I just letting you know. Last year I did it. Like, had no practice, wasn't trying, warming up for it or anything like that. I just did it on a whim. I was out there at St. John Fisher. We were with a few people. I know Matt Perino was out there, and we did it. I think at that time it was either 5.3 or 5.4. And I'm like, you know what? And now I'm like, actually, I think it would, if I'm ramping up and getting ready for it, my goal to run my age. So that's Nate's goal.
I guess so. I think that's what he said this morning. So I guess we'll have to see how it all shakes out. But I'm excited to see it. I don't know who to put my money on here. I don't know who's going to win.
All right. Well, I might have to enter this contest if they're going to do this. Maybe we'll do it at Bill's training camp, right at St. John Fisher. Do something like that, you know? Could do it that way. Sabres tonight, they are taking on the Ottawa Senators. It is the return of Dylan Cousins to Buffalo tonight. No Josh Norris apparently in the lineup. Is that what Lindy said today? My apologies for not knowing specifically.
Correct.
He was on earlier.
Yeah, that's correct. So Norris is out. Greenway was not skating this morning. I don't think he's playing tonight. I don't know if that one's confirmed yet. And then Yuri Kulik was on the ice this morning for morning skate, but I don't know if his availability tonight is confirmed either. I'm trying to find some tweets right now, but I'm not seeing anything on Kulik or Greenway for their availability tonight.
Okay, so that's tonight at 7, downtown, Sabres versus Senators. Senators in a playoff spot right now. They are fighting for that spot. And you know what? I think keep the Rangers out. That's cool. Just keep winning. I'm okay with the Senators making it. I'd like to see Dylan Cousins and get into the playoffs. That's fine. I have no ill will. I know a lot of you do because of the Sabres-Senators rivalry from 15 years ago or whatever, but I'm fine with it. So, if they want to keep winning and keep the Rangers out, that I would be totally okay with that. Either way, Sabres tonight, though, take on the Ottawa Senators. Maybe the Sabres can get a win tonight. We'll have the pregame coverage for you here at 6 p.m. on WGR. The puck drops at 7 downtown on WGR and along the Sabres radio network. I will not be in this chair in this time slot tomorrow. You will hear Zach Jones and Derek Kramer. Josh will be along as well. I will be tomorrow with Mike Shope at 3 p.m. We're going to be at Roswell Park Cancer Institute, and we're going to be over there tomorrow doing the show with him. Bulldogs away, so I'll be with Mike tomorrow at 3 o'clock over at Roswell, so check us out there. And then on Thursday, Josh, when we come back, Pete Lembo, UB head coach, is going to join us on Thursday. So how about that? We're going to Pete Lembo on the air on Thursday. UB spring practices are going on. We'll take a timeout here, and when you come back, you're going to have Sabres Live, One Bills Live. Show up with the Bulldog after that in WGR.